Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. And today I'm joined by a remarkable father-son team. Dr. Charles Becht IV, CEO of Becht, and his son, Charles Becht V, president of Becht. For more than 55 years, Becht has been at the forefront of engineering services for the process, power, and energy industries. Dr. Becht is a recognized global authority in pressure vessels, piping, and elevated temperature design with more than 60 publications, two books, and numerous honors, including the ASME Pressure Vessel and Piping Medal. His son, Chuck V, brings deep expertise in nuclear and mechanical engineering, leading advanced modeling, stress analysis, and fitness for service work for clients across those industries. Together, they represent not only two generations of engineering excellence, but also the ongoing evolution of a family-led company that's servicing clients worldwide. Gentlemen, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks for having us on, Ed.
Great having you today. And we, by the way, are here at Becht's headquarters in Liberty Corner, New Jersey. So we're doing it live. So let's start with the history. Chuck, can you share how Becht came into being and what those early years of the company were like?
Well, my father was an industrial engineer, and he didn't like how chief engineers of these manufacturing organizations got older. They seemed to be migrated out of the company. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to take control of his life, and he started Becht Engineering Company in 1964.
Okay.
And, you know, when he left and started the company, he had no clients, he had no work, and so we just went out for 2 months camping in the national parks out west, which was a great start. And then he built the company. It never was that large before I joined, but they did some interesting projects, like in the 70s, they ahead of their time doing solar energy projects and garbage recycling projects and various other things.
So how old were you when you started to get an orientation that, hey, my dad has this business and it's some kind of a engineering consulting business?
Well, he was working out of our house for a lot of years, so obviously I knew he was doing that. And then when I was going to college, I worked some summers part-time.
So was it clear to you that that was going to be your path as you were coming out of college?
Well, it was clear to me I was going to be an engineer, but whether I was going to join the family firm. I mean, the family firm at that time was not doing anything, any technical work of particular interest to me.
Okay.
I mean, they were doing building HVAC, electrical, structural, and some mm-hmm. work for condominium associations, and occasional light industrial. And when I graduated from Stanford, I went to LA and worked on liquid metal fast breeder reactor technology.
Okay.
Which was more interesting.
Yeah, it sounds quite interesting. So what brought you back?
Well, around 1980, Jimmy Carter was killing the breeder reactor program, which didn't impact me at that time. In fact, when I told them I was leaving, they said, oh, we're going to put breeder reactors in space and other places. So they said there was future there.
Right.
But my mother cut an advertisement out of the New York Times for Exxon Research and Engineering, which, you know, the job looked like something I would want to do, and it was all asking for the qualifications that I had in spades. So I typed up my resume, sent it, they flew me out, and they offered me three different positions in Florham Park, New Jersey, mm-hmm. and I accepted. So basically my mother got me back get me back to New Jersey.
Okay, and then from there, eventually the segue to Becht.
Well, yeah, then in 1986, I left Exxon Research and Engineering and joined Becht.
Nice. I mean, there's quite a bit of an exodus at that time, right? In 1986.
Well, over 3 or 4 years, morale was terrible. But because the price of oil was down, the synfuels projects were getting killed, a lot of mm-hmm. technology work was not going to be done. And you know, it was an opportunity to, and I was concerned because, you know, I had a growing family, and my wife had a realtor business. She was one of the top realtors in New Jersey. And they'd send me on these 6-month assignments, but there's always the undercurrent that they're going to want me to go to England for 2 years or Singapore for 2 years. And this way, I wasn't going to be dislocated from New Jersey.
Made sense. Understood. So let's talk about you, Chuck Five. How did you come to that realization that, hey, I'd like to be part of this business too? Like, talk about that. Talk about your journey.
Sure. Yeah. Like growing up, just seeing my father come home with the big blueprints. I remember coming to the office and there's those big boards with the erasers and everything, and the drafting boards. Just growing up around it, certainly was intrigued with engineering, intrigued with how to build things, how to make things work. And then going to college and then getting my master's, I was still doing some of the summer internships with the company. And what really interested me was the variety of work. It was working for different clients any given week, working on different technical challenges any given week. There's an excitement and kind of something new around the corner with any given project.
So it sounds like that influence started when you were quite young.
Yeah, it started, and then it really cemented. I'd got my master's, and I was looking at potentially joining some power companies. So I was interviewing with a couple different power companies because I got my master's in nuclear engineering. But then I had an opportunity at Beck to work part-time on a project down. A client had an emergency issue, a deflagration event in one of their heaters, and they had to rebuild it quite quickly to get back up and running. So it was like a 30-day work event on site, 12-hour days. And it was pretty intoxicating, you could say, to be in that environment. You know, things really matter. You know, the results are dependent on what you're accomplishing any given day. And that's what really got me hooked on this idea of consulting.
So you had a taste of it and you liked that taste. And then you came back and said, more or less, hey, I'd like to be all in. Was that kind of how it happened?
By the way, the project was in Aruba at a time.
Oh,
not okay. A bad spot for.
Okay, I'm twisting the arm there to go to Aruba.
he was doing a great job down there. There was a plan for him to go into the nuclear industry and come back to the company.
Okay.
But he did such a great job in Aruba, the clients loved him. Mm-hmm. He took charge of the whole thing. I told him, hey, well, why don't you just join Beck now? And then, you know, he came back and renegotiated my offer. But
that's great. It's always interesting to hear these like journeys because no one is ever the same.
Right.
But one common element from the many guests we've had on the show is how impactful, whether we realize it or not, that early influence is.
Right.
You know, that early exposure, those seemingly simple trips to the office somehow put something in motion inside you, you know, and then carrying it forward, you know, when the time came. You know, you probably walked in with a lot more tribal knowledge than you gave yourself credit for and was able to step in and do an amazing project out of the gate. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, my brothers and sister are all engineers, and one might think that our parents locked us in the basement until they came out with engineering degrees, but they're actually quite hands-off on, like, you know, they gave some guidance on exactly how to pursue our college education and our careers. But in general, it was, like you say, it was more by osmosis that direction.
Yeah. And it's interesting that kind of leads me to my next question. Not just the two of you, but it sounds like the whole family has got a level of technical acumen. So a question would be, how do you balance that sort of deep technical mind with the other side of the brain that's responsible for leading and growing a business organization? How do you strike the balance?
Well, I think the technical mind lends itself to leading a business organization.
Okay.
And basically what happened over my career is I was started out being technical expert, solving people's problems. And as the business grew, you know, I had to migrate further away from doing technical work and more towards leadership work and building the business. To this point, I only do technical work on some sparse problems that have particular challenges, and it's mainly just giving advice as to how people should go.
Was that a hard transition for you to kind of step away from some of the hands-on work you were doing to more of a leadership role?
No, it's all challenging and interesting, and it occurred over like 30 years. So
okay.
It was not abrupt.
I think you need to be open to outside input as well. So I remember very early on, my father, like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, really recommending us go to some of these conferences, PSMJ and others, mm-hmm. to connect with other leaders, to really learn what it's like to be a manager, to be a leader. Mm-hmm. There's also some leadership development forums we did over the course of the years. And then 5 years ago, actually, we got an executive coach for our team, and he brought some of the more human element of what it means to be a leader, how to engage with clients as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, admittedly, as engineers, we don't have the strongest soft skills. So how do you bring in those other experts that help you get a little better in mm-hmm. that space, right?
Understood. And in addition to yourself, are there other family members currently in the organization now that are involved? Or is this the two of you? Do you have some others?
No, yeah. So my sister is leading our learning and development division, which, you know, has a lot of training courses, has training programs for both degreed and non-degreed folks in our client organizations, trying to make it so like we develop these technical solutions, but how do our clients really use that to then get better themselves and not only just depend on our solutions? Mm-hmm. And then I have a cousin who's in our corrosion materials integrity division, Ali Shapiro.
Okay.
And my brother was in the company, but joined, created his own company that's managing a refinery in France right now, actually, Fos-sur-Mer.
Okay.
But he's also still a director of impact engineering and was still engaged.
Yeah.
You know, when he had this opportunity, it looked like a great opportunity for him to go into this. And, mm-hmm. and it was. It turned out to be.
Okay. So you were okay with the fact that he kind of moved into another, even though he
Well, when he brought up the subject, it was like, oh, no, you can't do that. But, but you know, thinking about it, it was like, yeah, he's created a whole new, I mean, we're all working together.
Yeah.
Okay, I see.
As, you know, we're not, it's not like he's over here. I mean,
we're still in the same building.
You know? Okay, okay.
We're intimately involved and part owner of that operation.
Okay.
So it's a, really kind of another part of the family.
So there's a bit of an entrepreneurial streak then that's coming out of the family too, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ability to be opportunistic and to look at other ventures and opportunities and, you know, your other son going out and doing that.
Yeah, like we started up a company, Beck Industrial Group, which he's on the board of directors of that. I'm chairman of that, and he's very involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it all ties together. Mostly it's focused on the energy sector, and mm-hmm. we are kind of vertically integrated with different organizations.
I think as a family business, you need to be quite flexible. Like, it's funny, we had this strategic planning session 8 years ago or something. We were sitting in this conference room chatting. I'm like, oh, how big could we get? Maybe each division would have 25 people. And now we have these multiple companies. There's divisions with 80 people in them. And, you know, but you each step along the way, you talk and you stay aligned. Mm-hmm. But and you see that it's still pointing to like your common goal as you make these changes.
That's really interesting. And that's pretty amazing that you set forth some plans, and it sounds like you're exceeding them in many respects. That's not bad. So clearly there's a strong dynamic. And a question that I am always intrigued by is, you know, right now we're sitting here, CEO and president, but also father and son. How do you guys balance the dynamics of both relationships? In the workplace, are you business, or is there a blend? Like if you're at to dinner with the family, is it no business is discussed? Like, do you have like lines that you draw, or is it a bit more organic? How does it work in your situation?
Well, like, we have the grandchildren, we have 8 grandchildren in the immediate area over often on Sunday mornings, and then Chuck and Derek and I and Chris will talk about business things, because that's of interest to us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we probably get complaints that maybe family gatherings is a little business focused, but then, you know, the grandkids are also running around, and you have a bit of both.
Okay.
But yeah, we probably don't ever necessarily stop talking about work, because it's such an inherent part of the overall family and business. Yeah.
And it's okay. It's okay with you guys. Just the way it flows, it works. Yeah. Cool.
And I don't have anything really I'm observing in our relationship. It just seems natural, and there's nothing forced about it. So I don't have any specific
okay.
thing to offer on that.
Okay. Yeah, it's a
and it's progressed.
Just need a level of trust, and I think also like a level of curiosity. So earlier in my career, you know, I'd always ask my father, because you know, both being mechanical engineers, you know, as I was trying to solve problems in the mechanical engineering space, I would call him up and say, "Hey, how? What about this? What have you seen here?" And just being curious and wanting to learn. And then, you know, as I grew into a management role, how do I learn from my father on what it means to be an effective manager? Mm-hmm. So just bringing that sense of curiosity to the relationship, and then him having the trust and letting me run the things the way I run them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So today, day-to-day operations is run by Chuck and his team.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I basically successfully transitioned to the next generation. I'm still engaged, but I actually don't have to be.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And that's a hard transition to make, as many of us know. You know, that's not always that easy.
It's easier if you have the right people.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So let's talk about that transition for a minute. Tell us a little bit, like taking on the role of president here, Chuck. What was that experience like? And like, did you know you were ready? Was it time? How did that all come to fruition?
Well, it really came together a few years ago. We were, you know, my brother Derek was leaving the company to pursue this new opportunity. We had some other leadership changes in the executive team. And so we sat down together and really charted out what it would look like for me moving from vice president over half the company to president over the entire company. And it was just an open discussion. We also had my sister in that conversation because she's also a board member. And we really thought about, you know, what would be best received from the employees? How could we best, you know, manage the company? And mm-hmm. and so just like an open collaborative conversation on how to make that transition.
That's great.
But yeah, it was a long, Chuck started as a practicing engineer in the nuclear division and then became division manager of mechanical engineering division. And then when Derek joined the company, he formed up the process engineering division. And as we're trying to develop the leadership skills on both Derek and Chuck, we split the company. We formed engineering services and plant services. So then Chuck had the opportunity to be running five or six or seven divisions under engineering. And as he said, when Derek left, then we kind of had Chuck move up and brought other people into VP positions on those parts of the company.
And that lends to another recurring theme in a lot of the folks we've talked with is that, you know, you didn't start up here. You had to work your way up.
Yeah.
You know, and you had to hit milestones. And then there was an inflection point of a readiness where, you know, you're like, okay, it's time. And the circumstances indicated that it was time. And you had a track record, you know.
So I think it brings authenticity, you know, both with your interactions internally and externally. As we're talking it with the employees and what it means to, like, write proposals or deal with a challenging client interaction or to deal with a challenging technical scope of work, you know, having lived through that, we can talk through how do we make it easier for everyone? How do we learn from lessons in the past? And then also when you're talking to clients, you know, part of my role is also interacting with clients, finding, you know, new market opportunities. It wouldn't really be possible to do that if I didn't live through all those different stages and all those steps. I wouldn't speak with authenticity.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, and it builds a lot of goodwill and trust in your team, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's been one recurring theme, it's trust, not only trust with the team and the greater Becht organization, but within the dynamics of the various family members.
Right.
Trust to have that fluidity of discussion. Hey, we can talk business and be okay here.
Yeah.
My grandson's about to light the stove, so maybe we should stop talking about this and get him something to play with, you know, or whatever the case may be, but there's that fluidity. Chuck Ford, you've done so much with this company, had so many moments, but if I were to ask you if there's one that always will stand out in your mind as, wow, that was an amazing moment for Becht, for the company. When you look back, what's one of those catalyst moments for you?
When we split the company in 2006.
Okay, talk about that.
And the part of the company that, you know, my father had put together and my sister was involved in went one way, to Becht Engineering BT. And, you know, and I remained, then became sole owner of Becht Engineering Company, and I had free hands to build it to where it is today.
Mm-hmm.
So
that was kind of a defining moment to take the company in a direction.
That was the biggest moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
Nice. So, you know, we were talking before about under now your leadership as president, Chapter 5. Company is growing, you know, you're driving for growth. What would you say is really some of the reasons why you're experiencing the growth that you are, that's even to some degree surpassing some of the plans you set forth? What's going on that's creating that surge for Becht right now?
Yeah, well, it's very much like a self-propelling momentum building. You know, you get really good people, it attracts more good people, clients want to interact with you and get some of the solutions that those good people are developing. So it's, you know, we've, over the last few years, we've really aligned the leadership teams and gotten some fantastic talent into those senior positions, and then they've been able to recruit additional good people. And our brand awareness in industry is just growing because of that, or in parallel to that, over the last 4 or 5 years. So we go to some of these conferences and people are like, wow, Becht's name is everywhere. And they wouldn't have necessarily said that 4 or 5 years ago. So I think it's that patient, like just continuing to reinvest in the company.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like any one particular thing. It's just accrued wins over time.
And it's maybe doing a lot of, you know, some would call them a lot of little victories.
Yeah, well, I think so, yeah.
That's the flywheel analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you keep
sure.
pushing on the flywheel and it keeps accelerating.
Yeah.
You just keep that constant. Push, absolutely. push. A lot of small wins.
Yeah, but they all add up, right? Yeah.
And you got to be patient through like the disruptions. Like when COVID hit, we really doubled down on what we were about. You know, we were making investments to go internationally and we continued going in that direction. We didn't pull back despite some of the economic headwinds. And then, you know, this past year, our clients have had some margin challenges. So some of our work has slowed down in some areas, but then we found ways to grow it in other areas. Mm-hmm. So you got to be patient through those disruptions.
And further on that, you know, when we had a little bit of a slowdown, yeah, we're a learning organization, and we took that as an opportunity to upskill all of our staff on consulting skills and how to interact with clients and getting the POs in. So, I mean, the market's come back, but we're better positioned to handle it because we took the opportunity to have a learning experience for us and our staff.
Mm. And if there's anything that I'm hearing in this conversation that's sort of occurring is that this is an organization that seems to always be on its toes, you know, never leaning back on its heels and saying, okay, we've done enough. No, it's like, what more can we do now? Where can we go now? What are the opportunities that the challenges of the day are representing, and how and where do we fit in that?
Yeah. We have a state, so every quarter we do a state of the business, a live interactive state of the business with the entire company. We review some of our results and we ask for questions ahead of time, anonymous questions. One of the questions was kind of on this. It was like asking, like they heard that we're thinking of doing something new and they were wondering what the risks of that were or how we thought about that. And my team and I were thinking of a way to respond to that. And what we're saying is every year Becht's going to be changing. And really what we want to evaluate is, you know, is it aligned with our mission of helping our clients succeed? Is it aligned with our core values of how we treat our folks and how we work with each other? And does it make financial sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, to be a successful or even an excellent company nowadays, you got to be willing to change pretty constantly. But they're not reactive changes. Like it's, you know, it's more purposeful. It's more intentional.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
But we also, you know, are good at seeing opportunities, but anybody can see an opportunity, but executing on making it happen is what really makes a difference.
Very true. I wanted to just touch on something, too, just to make sure that our listenership really got the full magnitude of what you do here. So they might understand, okay, you're doing some work in the greater energy space, and it has to do with consulting. But could one of you maybe share, and you don't have to name names if there's client confidentiality, but a case study or a scenario that Becht really, you know, it was your moment to shine, where you were the hero in a scenario where you worked with a certain customer or client to help them achieve something that they couldn't get done, that really would sort of encapsulate, this is the type of work we do here at Becht.
Yeah, well, I mean, so we have a broad interaction. We work at about 400 facilities a year around the globe, so being a global company, and clients really depend on us for that, like, emergency response. And I'm just thinking of a situation. A client just installed a brand new piece of equipment, and it was a boiler, steam boiler, waste heat recovery. And they were only getting like 80% of the expected steam generation. And so they were struggling with margin. They weren't making, it was costing them more money to make up for that lost steam generation capacity. Mm-hmm. There were also vibration issues. So they were worried about it like shaking itself apart. And, okay. and so there's a safety risk associated sure. as well.
Yeah.
And so we had a holistic team looking at that. But we also created a 3D model and did a modeling how the gas was flowing through the boiler and found that with just some small reconfiguring of the internal baffles, not a big construction project, some small reconfiguration, we're able to increase the steam generation by 20% and completely eliminate the vibration hazard. And so it was like we did some advanced analysis behind it, but then practical physical modeling and mm-hmm. then bringing together different disciplines. And so that's one example.
And by the way, as often occurs, there were other consultants that had come in there previously and were totally unsuccessful.
Okay. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'll give you another example.
Yeah, please.
Just to give a little different variety. So there was a client, well, became a client over in Greece that had severe cracking issues in a vessel that's required for them to produce gasoline. And they went on they did an internet search on things about this cracking issue and found a paper written by Garrett Buchheim, who was leading at that time our corrosion materials division. And they contacted him about the issue. And we had Alavo Diaz, who was in our Canadian operations, fly out there overnight to help them with that problem. That was even before getting a PO. This is on a handshake, right? Well, handshake over the phone. So he got to the site, evaluated it, looked at it, severe cracking, and then we overnight did what's called a level 3 fitness for service, a very detailed analysis to determine whether it would be safe to continue to run or not. And as we kind of expected, that level, it failed the level 3 fitness for service. But we came up with an alternative solution, coating the inside of the vessel and doing non-destructive examination and inspections on it. And that enabled them to restart while they were still procuring a vessel that was going to take, I don't know, 3 months or 6 months to get. If we had not come up with that solution, then Greece would have lost a third of its gasoline production. And the I think managing director, I went over, had dinner with them one time I was passing through Athens. And he said, well, when he saw on the website this engineering from an owner's perspective, actually wrote us a letter, said, when I on the website saw engineering with an owner's perspective, he said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He said, well, definitely it's engineering with an owner's perspective.
Yeah. And now they're a long-term client of ours over the last 6 or 7 years. Right. It's like that responsiveness, but then being practical.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, both scenarios were brilliant and really represented some brilliant engineering. But you know, at the front end of that was that high level of responsiveness overnight, on a handshake, on the scene, recognizing something of a mission critical operation in both cases, mm-hmm. you know, massive loss of revenue. And, you know, for the benefit of our listeners, these are not small pieces of equipment we're talking about. They're not going to fit on a conference room table.
No.
No, these are rather large, major capital expenditures and, you know, probably, you know, millions of dollars at stake to be won or lost
by the day.
Yeah.
By
the day. So these are not taken lightly, and chances are if, you know, somebody on the client end gets things wrong,
they
put themselves out of a job.
I mean, there's a lot of cost the client when these equipment shut down. On the other hand, if it blows up and burns down the refinery, then that's a very severe consequence. So we feel we have the expertise to draw a fine line on this is as far as you can push it and still be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. And it would sound like you lead with caution
where
possible and tell them, hey, this is not that equipment in that one scenario. That needs to shut down.
It's always like you look at the different options and you got like from like risk-based perspective, like, hey, this pathway, maybe you could do that for a week or maybe you could do it for 6 months or maybe you could do it for a year with this kind of inspection, with this kind of repair. So mm-hmm. you're giving the client multiple options and there's like a practicality behind all of it, but it has to be rooted in safety.
Mm.
And frankly, we have the expertise to make the tough calls.
Yeah.
And get and inform our clients. So.
Yeah. There was another point you brought up, Chuck Ford, when you were talking about a new client that came from another engineering firm and they couldn't figure it out. How often do you come across that where somebody's coming to Beck because they've been a few other places before and they're like not getting either the service, the solution, or the expertise that they need to feel that they're adequately getting whatever they need to get done to the finish line? Does that happen with some regularity where they're coming to you, you know, because somebody else couldn't meet the needs?
Well, you know, almost all of our clients every day on a day-to-day basis are continuing clients.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those started with using somebody else because
sure.
their needs didn't start yeah. with when they came to us. But all of them stay with us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they migrate to us.
I see.
Yeah, about 90% of our work is repeat customers right now. So I would say nowadays, it's most often coming from folks who know us, but mm-hmm. certainly there's a lot of that. And, you know, it's the other providers, they might have different focus areas. Like they might be selling technology that might slightly bias them in the recommendation they're giving, or they might not be as deep of an expert. So they're a little more risk averse. So they're a little more cautious in what they're mm-hmm. saying because they don't necessarily know what's behind the rule whereas we've written a lot of those rules, so we know what's behind it. So mm-hmm. there's reasons for those different, you know, shortcomings, if you will. And I think we just bring a focus that's really entirely about the owner and what the challenges they're facing.
Mm. And it sounds like once they have a taste of the backed experience, if you will,
right.
they're 90% of the time. Coming
yeah.
back.
Yeah. Well, and you got to be vigilant on it. Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
So we've been doing client surveys over the last 5 or 6 years, and we learned some things from that, like focusing on schedule. So then we had a whole initiative to, you know, double down on how we were committed to the schedules that we laid out at the beginning of a project. So you take these client surveys, and then you got to continually reinvest in making sure that the client's getting nothing but the best.
Mm. That's true, because in your world, I mean, there's a somewhat of a fixed radius of clientele, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, every client then matters, you know,
oh, yeah.
maybe a little more than in some other industries where there's thousands or tens of thousands of client opportunity.
At the conferences, they all mingle. And so
sure.
certainly if someone gets a bad experience, that would certainly indirectly make its way around.
Yeah, yeah. It's the way of human nature. It's like if we have a great experience, we might tell 5 people. If we have a bad experience, we're going to tell 15 people.
Yeah.
We have an average experience, ironically, we tell no one.
We tell no one. Yeah.
Nobody celebrates vanilla ice cream,
yeah.
apparently.
Hence the net promoter score, basically. Yeah.
There you go. So let's talk about maybe the here and now and the look ahead. Engineering as a category continues to evolve, you know, especially mm-hmm. with new tools, and a tool that's infiltrating every industry is AI,
mm-hmm.
as well as you've also got, you know, we touched on some advanced modeling capabilities and things like that. How do you see some of the new technologies shaping back in the years ahead? To what extent are you adopting AI or other advanced skill sets and technologies to make ready back for the next
yeah.
generation of clients?
Yeah, well, I mean, our industry has a significant turnover, a lot of retirements, a lot of loss of experience. So when you look at loss of experience, you got to think of one of two ways. Is some of this experience something that I can automate, or is it something that I need to mentor and pass on to the next generation? And so, you know, as we look at that broad spectrum, you know, you got to think about how can we mentor the next generation? How can we train the next generation? And then if there's some things that can make their way into software, that's more the automation route.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're looking at, we're working on some projects to incorporate AI into some of our software tools, but it's very much from the perspective of like helping people find the answer faster or frame up the right questions to ask as they approach a technical challenge. We're not ready yet to say, hey, AI is going to be giving definitive answers because, you know, the safety involved in this industry and the risks that the industry present.
Mm.
So it's more about like guiding them to a best practice or guiding them to the right calculator.
Yeah.
Is kind of how we're using it.
I see. Yeah. It would seem that in any sort of, I'll say, regulated or mission critical
right.
industries, AI is showing up as a collaborative tool, sometimes
yes.
As a support tool, but there's always that kind of trust and verify factor where we still want human beings to take a look in on and not totally trust AI for you know, it's out of the gate responses or prompts.
Yeah, and even like the advanced analysis softwares that don't even necessarily have AI in them, the more sophisticated they get, the more the danger is that the engineer doesn't understand the first principles behind it, you know, and really learn how to carefully double check the model, carefully double check the results with some hand equations. You know, we have engineers certainly that, you know, through college and all that, just are experts on the tool, but not necessarily experts on the math behind the tool. And so we've had to take steps to really double down on teaching people how to do those practical checks.
You must have a very interesting perspective on that, on the latest, and you know, the new emerging engineers coming out of school, where they may know technologies, but sometimes they've not learned the root, you know, rationale behind that technology. Do you ever run into that, or are you saying, yes, you understand how to get there, but you don't understand the foundation of how you got there?
Well, like Chuck said, curiosity is key. You care about it to begin with.
Yeah.
You know, you just want to punch in numbers. And we just try and hire people that care and provide opportunities to learn and train. I mean, one of our big challenges because of this turnover is, you know, clients is accelerating competency development of their young engineers. And they have even a high turnover as young engineers. And in fact, if the engineer's job is to put a question into AI and get an answer and hand it to somebody else, they're not going to stick around long unless they're not particularly worthwhile as an employee. So, you know, you got to have the opportunity to continue to learn.
So when a, you know, a young engineer, maybe just out of college or maybe a few years out of college, they're contemplating career options, what do you think is bringing them to BECCT? What do you think, you know, when you go out and you're recruiting and looking to bring in some new talent, why are people saying yes to BECCT? What is it about this company that's special that people see in you all?
Well, sometimes they go on Glassdoor and see if we have a 5.0 Glassdoor rating.
Okay.
And they may see our website. They may hear of us. I'm not as close to that now.
Understood. All right.
Yeah, well, I think it's just word of mouth. So we recruit a lot of folks from within industry that have that perspective of having worked in our clients' organizations. And so, you know, they might have worked with us where they were a client of ours, or maybe they worked with a colleague that has since joined us and they heard good things. I think it's, you know, the culture is we really deeply care about helping our clients succeed, but we also really treat each other with respect. You know, we're honest with one another. You know, we care about creating an environment where we can be successful with business, but also take time and spend that with family and care about our community. So it's that blend of, you know, rigorous excellence on the technical side, but also caring about each other from a personal side, I think.
And for engineers just coming out of college, typically they would have interned with us if we're going to make a hiring decision. So we like to have experience with them.
And then with us.
Yeah. It's also interesting that sometimes you hire from what used to be client side.
Yeah.
So what a tremendous experience you can now bring to a future client. The person that's going out to is like, yeah, I can work on this because I used to work on this type of equipment in my career, right? Is that essentially what it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, like over 70 or 80% of our folks have worked inside client organizations. So that doubles down on that, you know, engineering from an owner's perspective, if you will.
Yes. I mean, you can basically validate that and you know, even quantify if you had to.
Right.
You know, yeah, we've been there, literally.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful.
And it has to do with, like, the work from anywhere is a powerful attraction. So we've had people that, you know, they liked where they were working, but family might have moved them to a different state or something might have come up. And now they're exploring for employment opportunities, and we can be that home and not really tie it to a specific geographic location.
Okay.
So I think that was a differentiator.
Okay. That's great. That's great. We're sitting here with Gen 2, Gen 3. Is there the possibility of a Generation 4 in this organization, or are we too soon to ask that question?
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, it's certainly always a possibility, but I do think what I've been looking at is how do we make the organization very sustainable from, like, a professional perspective? So we have like formalized our bonus schemes and made that. We've also become fully transparent, so we share all our financial data with the whole company. We think about, you know, how employees can be successful, how shareholders can be successful, how our clients can be successful, and trying to codify all of that, right? And so I do think like a very healthy business over the long term, it doesn't necessarily have to be a family member leading it, but certainly that's great as well. But I think a very resilient business can be either scenario.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So as we're sitting here now, Chuck 4, you see, I'm sitting next to Chuck 5 in the leadership role as president of this company. How does that feel for you personally?
Well, I'm proud of what he's accomplished and what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And on the flip side, if you're to say, you probably had a lot of life lessons from dad, but if there's one carry forward, you say, yeah, my father consistently does this and I'm going to continue to do that in my career, what would be that, maybe that one principle or, you know, Chuck 4-ism or however you wish to frame it?
Yeah, I mean, it's very much leading with trust. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the company has always been very entrepreneurial and always encouraged employees like pursue their own passions and their own projects that could help our clients succeed, and giving them autonomy, giving them freedom to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say leading with trust is definitely the one that's impactful for me.
Excellent.
Yeah, that correlates, that is no micromanaging.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. That's great. And nobody likes to do that. And usually when you're doing that, that means something's wrong somewhere, right?
Well, you can't. How can you grow if you're micromanaging?
Not well. Not well.
Yeah, I think, you know, we try to have a very intent-based, like outcome-based approach to how we run the business. And it's not so much like, are you following the exact procedures, but are you getting the right outcomes?
Mm-hmm.
And so you give people autonomy, you give people freedom, but there's also even a higher level of expectation that comes with that freedom and that autonomy, because it can't be like, oh, I followed the procedure and I didn't get the right result. The real, you know, evaluation is going to be, did you get the right result regardless of the procedure you followed?
Mm-hmm.
Once you give people the freedom, once you give people the autonomy. And so, you know, I think when you try to proceduralize everything, you're proceduralizing to the lowest common denominator, and that sometimes can lead to pretty mediocre outcomes. And so that's the balance we try to strike, is a lot of freedom, a lot of autonomy, but with that comes responsibility.
That's a great point.
But we make a significant effort to make sure all our people are aligned.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're aligned, they know which way they got to go.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then we give them freedom to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
And that's something you continuously work on over the years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So looking to the here and now, and I'll open this up to either of you gentlemen. What's something that's really exciting going on right now at Beck? Something that's exciting one of you personally, or something that's exciting for the company that's getting you a little bit animated about the here and now or the near future?
Well, over the last few years, again, like what we've done with some of the hires we've made, we just have an incredible leadership team, incredible employees through the entire organization that really care. So our momentum is increasing in terms of our clients' recognition of what we do, our employees' recognition of how they can more broadly help our clients succeed. We've always delivered technically excellent solutions. There's some interesting things going on right now where we're looking at, well, how do our clients take those solutions and become more successful in the next 5-10 years? You know, how do they really take what we're giving them and implement it? And how do we help their employees get better, not just provide them technically excellent solutions? Mm-hmm. So it's really the momentum we're building. And then also some of these new things we're thinking about that are going to help our clients be more successful over the long term.
Awesome. Chuck 4, anything to add to that? Anything that's out right now that you're excited about in the business or in the industry?
We're always doing interesting things. Mm-hmm. I mean, we created this models that nobody else could do, that people worked decades on like a high temperature hydrogen attack or crude corrosivity, and we've tackled them one at a time and developed the only solution out there in industry for those issues. So we're always doing interesting things. Coke drum life assessment, another great tool we developed, again, to help our clients succeed. So I'm not sure I actually answered your question.
Well, those all sound like really fascinating things that you're working on, but I think to your point is you're always working on fascinating things and always staying curious and always, you know, pushing the boundaries of what can be done and what can be created in the spirit. And I love the fact that by being very channeled in your focus, it's truly broadened your expertise and become, you know, the authority in the category.
You also had to be a learning organization. So you had to accept, like, if you pursue all these changes, maybe 1 out of 10 times you'll have made a mistake. But if you can be honest about that with your employees, with yourself, with each other, and you can learn from it, like, you're not going to lose the momentum you're building if you're honest with that, mm-hmm. the fact that you're making mistakes, the fact that you can learn from it, the fact that you can take that lesson learned and do something better. So I think, like, that's another part of, if you approach this constant change, you got to be honest when it's working and when it's not working.
That's an excellent point. So going way back, you were at maybe a crossroads. Do I get involved in the family business or not? And then you did this project in Aruba, and the next thing you know, you're in the family business.
Yeah, I'm in deep.
So for a young person, and a lot of times our listenership are young people that are maybe at that crossroads, and I, as a second gen, I was at that crossroads, as were a lot of the guests on our show. Somebody that's sitting there and saying, do I join the family business or do I go my own way? Is there a piece of advice you might offer them in helping them come to terms with that decision?
Yeah, I think it's really if the work of the business itself aligns with your passions. I mean, mm-hmm. for me, it's meeting new people, solving really complex, challenging problems. It's like little puzzles, each of these projects that I found fascinating, that I was drawn to. So, you know, it was the core of what the business was interesting to me. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, family business or even not family business, if you want to dive into it, like, can you be passionate about the work they do?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would probably be, for me, the most important thing.
That's an excellent point. Last question, gentlemen. If any of our listeners want to learn more about what you've got going on here at Becht or connect with one of you individually, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, so we're publishing constantly on LinkedIn. So if you could follow Becht on LinkedIn, there's interesting articles about how we're helping clients succeed or things we're doing within the company. And then Becht.com is our website, and certainly we try to post. We have and also on that website, you can subscribe to our newsletter where we publish articles on different technical challenges that we've tackled each month.
Awesome.
And you can also reach out to the company via our website.
Okay, yep. Becht.com. Okay, yep. And all that will be in the show notes for sure.
Great.
Well, Chuck, thank you so much for joining us here on Growing Up B2B. It's really inspiring to talk to you both and to hear how you're blending world-class technical expertise with family and carrying this great legacy forward. Again, we've been speaking with Dr. Charles Becht IV, CEO of Becht, and Charles Becht V, President of Becht. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Ed.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.